Hello and welcome into this week's edition of the Half Asleep Rookie Stripes podcast. I'm Garth, that's Tyler. Thanks for waking me up this morning.
Yeah, you're welcome. Somebody's got to do it.
I guess. If I look a mess, I apologize. I'm a hot mess right now. Tyler literally made me get out of bed to do this, so this is early for me.
And Garth got off work at 11:30 and woke up at 11 and he's dead.
I'm not going to go to bed immediately after work. Why would I do that?
It's just like the normal night shift thing to do.
No, you got to wind down after work. Otherwise, you just lay in bed for 3 hours and because you're still like revved up from work.
So you know you got a desk job.
I guess.
I get home from work, take a shower, and I'm out.
Oh, I'm not. I cannot go to sleep after I get home from work. I've never been like that. Like, even before when I've done more physical jobs, I can't do it. I cannot go to bed right after work if I work late. I can't do it.
That's weird.
No, I feel like that's more normal than anything. I don't know. Let us know in the chat or in the comments. What do you do? Obviously, if you work a day shift, that's different. Like, if you get home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, obviously, you're not going to go to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But if you work something later into the evening, let us know. Chat, comments. Do you go straight to bed, or do you have to have, a couple hours to wind down after work before you go to bed? Let us know.
Dude, even when I work, day shift, when I get home, I don't want to do anything anymore.
I mean, I don't really want to do anything, but I also can't go to bed. So, I've got to, veg out on the couch for a couple hours and watch TV or something to wind down.
I get home and
I can't go straight to sleep.
I get home, eat dinner, and sit on the couch after a day shift, and I'm like, I shouldn't go to sleep right now. I shouldn't do it.
I don't understand how your body works, then.
It doesn't.
It's all that Dr. Pepper.
I'm a traitor today.
What?
Yeah.
Blasphemy.
Bubba Wallace would not be proud.
No, he would not. I'm not proud. I am so disappointed in you. You're Mr. Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I've also...
That's literally your name in the RNN Discord. You're Mr. Dr. Pepper.
I've also got a Coca-Cola t-shirt somewhere, so...
I'm going to change your name in the Discord to Traitor.
Traitor, yeah. Fair enough.
I am flabbergasted.
It happens.
Does it, though? It's not supposed to happen with Mr. Dr. Pepper.
But
you're cheating on Dr. Pepper.
But it's the cherry one.
Oh, that makes it okay.
It does.
For you to cheat on your lover, that makes it okay. Because your side piece is cherry. It's okay. Okay. I get it now. I get it.
See, there you go. Makes sense.
I don't get it.
Yeah, you do.
Absolutely not. You're a disgusting human being.
Meyer's got a really crappy selection of Dr. Pepper right now.
Maybe you should drink some water.
Absolutely not.
Okay. I see kidney stones incoming in your future.
Probably.
I like how you're just not going to do anything about that.
Probably not.
Okay.
Dr. Pepper and milk, and I'll live.
You should ask our mutual friend up there that you used to work with what kidney stones are like, and he'll dissuade you from ever trying to ever have them.
And over-explain everything in a way that makes
you... Well, yeah. that too. Maybe he'll over-explain it enough to where it makes sense to you.
Hey, I mean... There's a lot of skull to talk through if you're trying to convince me of something.
Yes, I'm aware.
There's this much brain and that much skull.
I've figured that out in the, 2 years now that I've known you? Is it 2 years? 3 years?
A little over 2 years, yeah.
Is it? Okay, well,
yeah. Yeah, probably around 2 years, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I've figured that out. The skull is very thick there. Your skull overdeveloped, so your brain compensated and shrunk.
Had to happen.
You know how when babies, they've got that that soft spot on the back of their skull and you're not supposed to mess with that?
I think I got
Tyler's parents took that a little too literally and just let the skull grow.
I think I got dropped on my soft spot a couple times.
I believe that.
I believe it too. It would explain a lot.
It would. Lots of racing this weekend. Talladega, China, Long Beach, Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. We've got some things to talk about, so let's jump right into it. We're going to start with what I think might be the most controversial race of the weekend, with the ARCA West race at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway. Overall, interesting race. It was more competitive than I thought it would be. We had no Sean... Well, okay, we did have Sean Hingorani, but not in the car he was originally entered in, because he and Hattori parted ways. So he ended up in the 24 car. I'm not sure what team that was, but it wasn't as fast, and he wasn't a factor for the win, barely a factor for the top five. But because of that, this race was a lot more competitive, because Trevor Huddleston wasn't quite as fast early on as I thought he would be. So, in fact, Trevor Huddleston was hovering back around like third, fourth, fifth most of the first half of the race until the break. Tyler Reif actually led, I think, all of the first half of the race. So Huddleston must have gotten some sort of adjustment that really fixed things during the break, because he went up, drove up to the lead after the break, led a lot of the end of the race. With about 15 laps to go, Cole Raz catches him and is trying to work on him, make the pass. He finally gets to the inside with about 10 laps to go. Couldn't complete the pass. These two were side by side for like 10 laps, all of the final 10 laps of the race. Raz on the inside, Huddleston on the outside. Raz could not complete the pass. Huddleston had just enough momentum on corner exit every time that he held on, and they were wheel to wheel every time down the straightaway. It was incredible. So, what does Cole Raz do? Turn three, last lap. Just drives straight up and doors Trevor Huddleston into turn three to force himself into the lead and wins the race as Huddleston slams into the wall off of turn four.
It's just short track racing.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the excuse. I can't support like that, though. Like, Huddleston raced him clean for 10 laps. You're racing for the win. Yes, I get it. But Huddleston raced him clean for 10 laps. You should show him that same respect that he showed you. Because once you don't, that all gets thrown out the window. Huddleston owes him one. At this point, Huddleston owes him one. And I would not blame Huddleston for just straight up dumping him in the next West race. Like,
it's uncalled for. F1 fans in shambles after watching the ARCA West finish.
Right?
Oh my, like, God, the car's touched.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing. It's not like Cole Raz completely wrecked Trevor Huddleston, but he knew what he was doing. He went dirty when he didn't need to. To be honest, he probably would have still won the race. All he had to do was just move up the track a little bit and not make contact. And I don't know if maybe that was the plan and he misjudged it and drove into Trevor. But either way, that's what he did. He just straight up door slams him and sends Huddleston up the track, and that's all she wrote. And I can't stand behind that. Like, that's not good racing etiquette. Yes, so he won the race. So I guess that's all that matters, but that's not good racing etiquette, and I do not agree with it.
So the theme for NASCAR this week was people overcompensating while racing for the lead.
Yes, basically. Yeah. We'll get to that. We're not quite there yet, but yes. Yeah, basically, I think that was about the consensus this weekend, interestingly enough. Overall, though, I didn't think Kern was a terrible race. I didn't think it was a great race outside of those last few laps. It was setting up to be a fantastic finish until Cole Raz messed it up. But either way, it is what it is. Moving on, let's go to Talladega now. Three races there this weekend. We go from a super exciting ARCA finish at Kern, which actually happened after the ARCA race at Talladega, to what I truly believe might be the worst race in the history of ever. Not a single thing happened in this ARCA race. Jake Finch led every lap on his way to the victory. Am I happy that Jake Finch won? Because that gives me a good points day and a little buffer over Tyler in our fantasy picks. Yes. Am I happy that that's the way the race went? Absolutely not. Literally, like, I honest to God fell asleep watching this race. It was terrible. ARCA should be ashamed that they allow a package that makes this possible to happen. Like, how? How is this a thing? How have we gotten to the point in ARCA, and then we're trying to spin it as if it's a decent race? Like, I've seen not only Mr. ARCA PR talking about how it's a great race, I've seen articles on the website trying to act like it was a good race. Like, it was not a good race. I know that's your job to try and act like it's a good race, but if it's not, don't try to shove it in our face like it was, because your fans are smarter than that. Or I hope they are.
What'd they do? Just single file line around top or what?
Yes.
Ah. So it's like watching one of the Daytona duels races.
Except that it was the whole race. Like, they get a little bit of racing in the duels, but that's literally what it was. Single file the entire race.
Nice.
Yeah. No wrecks, no nothing.
Oh, no wrecks at Talladega. Why do we even show up then?
Yeah, right?
We're only here to wreck race cars. Tony Stewart knows.
Right. Just start running them in a figure eight. Can you imagine a Talladega figure eight?
Nah, it'd probably be more entertaining.
It would. Well, it'd be more entertaining than an ARCA race, at least. The sad thing is, ARCA was the only race of the weekend that was terrible at Talladega. Like, yes, there were parts of the Cup race and the Xfinity race that got boring, but overall, I would call both of those good races. I can't say that about ARCA. ARCA was truly unadulterated awfulness. It was an awful sandwich. Oh. There is absolutely nothing. There was nothing to watch in that race. I don't get it. I have nothing else to say. Like, it was just bad.
Super speedways and ARCA are not a good combination.
No, they're not. Well, No. I'm going to walk that statement back. They can be good. We have seen good super speedway races in ARCA recently. I don't remember exactly which races they were, but we had at least one good super speedway race last year in ARCA. I think it was Daytona. Probably. I don't remember for sure now. I'd have to go back and look, but I think
this is the one Greg Van Alst won.
Yes, that's right. Okay, so yes, Daytona last year was good. I think Talladega might have been good too. I can't remember.
The super speedway racing just like loses me where you can do everything right the entire race, and then somebody screws up at the front of the field, and it doesn't matter what you did all race.
Yeah, exactly. Well, at least in this race, that didn't happen because nobody screwed up, nobody wrecked, nobody nothing. And wasn't Daytona this year kind of good, too? Probably. Or no, that was the one Jake Finch led the whole race, and then something happened at the end because they had that restart that Gus Dean was supposed to let him down in front, and he didn't.
Oh, yeah. It's like a Friends episode. The one where Jake Finch led the whole race. Which one? Yeah.
Yeah, right? Except that he didn't lead the whole race at Daytona. He was supposed to if the team orders had played out, but Gus Dean had other ideas. Yeah, ARCA has to do something about this super speedway package. Like, the excuse they've used in the past is, well, these are kids that are just getting their first start on these tracks. We don't want them to go out there and race really hard and get hurt, or I don't remember what the exact wording Charlie used at one point was. All right, but
then don't show up to super speedways then.
Right. Like, I just
send them to Atlanta. It's fine.
Yeah. I don't understand, because I mean, I guess I get where that mindset comes from, but at the same time, they're going to be exposed to that sort of racing when they move up to trucks or Xfinity after ARCA. So what good does it do them to be in a race like that at Talladega, where literally your foot is on the floor the entire time, you don't lift the entire... I mean, I'm sure not a single one of them lifted the entire race if there was never a caution and they're just riding around in that line the whole time. I'm sure not a single one of them lifted once. So what does that teach them? They don't learn anything. They're not prepared by being in that race. That does not prepare them at all for what they're going to experience in trucks and Xfinity at Talladega. Does not prepare them at all other than learning to put the pedal down and not lift. That's all they learned.
It does if they're training to be Joey Logano.
Or Michael McDowell, apparently.
They're making perfect clones of Joey Logano down in ARCA right now.
Yeah, I just...
Right foot down, don't lift.
Yeah. It's tough for me because I really do like ARCA, but it has been very hard to like ARCA the past few years. Because they just seem like they're in this echo chamber and all they want to believe is, oh, we're doing the right thing. We have great racing. And sometimes they do. More often than not anymore, these races in ARCA are not good. This is not the ARCA of 2018 and prior. Most of the time, it's just bad because you're getting Venturini domination, you're getting JGR domination, you might get a rev car that sneaks in and wins every once in a while, but that's usually only if the Venturini cars wreck or the JGR car wrecks. Like, and I know you can't just go in and arbitrarily say, okay, well, we are nerfing Venturini and JGR, that way the rest of the field has an opportunity. Like, you can't just go in and nerf one or two teams. Like, that's not fair for the whole sport, even if those two teams are just incredibly fast compared to the rest of the field. You can't do that, but there's got to be something you can do to make this product better, because they are not doing anything to make it better. They're just sitting by and going, well, everything's fine. It's like that meme of that dog sitting in a burning room that's just looking around, everything's fine. Like, ARCA is literally killing themselves right now.
Yeah. I mean, of course, like, you've been into ARCA for a while, but, like, from the outside looking in, not really interested in ARCA, this is what it's looked like for probably about the last 10 years.
Not quite. I would say ever since 2019 or so, this is what it looked like. 2018, I would say, was the last really good year for ARCA. MDM closing was, I think, what really set all this in motion to make ARCA not good. Because the thing with 2018 and prior was MDM was a true competitor 24/7 to Venturini and JGR. MDM wins the championship in 2018 with Sheldon Creed, shuts their doors 2 days later. Ever since then, it has literally been nothing but Venturini and JGR domination, and because their only other real competitor is gone. So Venturini dominated 2019. I think between the entire organization of Venturini, they won over half the races in 2019.
Well, didn't we look at it a couple months ago and see that ARCA is like not profitable at all whatsoever?
I don't think we looked at anything specifically other than prize money that the teams are earning per race, and it's not good. Outside of maybe Daytona, they're not making enough to break even for showing up for the weekend, especially a team like Venturini or JGR that's spending millions to get to track every weekend.
Say you're a big organization in Cup Series like Hendrick or whatever, like, we know Gibbs has all the Toyota stuff in ARCA, and, you know, that's their young driver thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, Hendrick does that through the Xfinity series and the truck series. They've got a whole bunch of team alliances. Any driver they want to have in their stable, they just throw in one of these Xfinity or truck teams.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need ARCA. So,
yeah,
unless you just have somebody that, for and giggles, really wants to be competitive in ARCA, they're not going to be in ARCA. They're going to go to Xfinity or trucks because there's more money, more eyes, more everything. And ARCA is just kind of there.
The thing is, they used to use ARCA. Like, there used to be an RCR ARCA team. There used to be a Hendrick ARCA team. There used to be a Morgan McClure ARCA team. Like, all these Cup teams had ARCA teams for their development drivers. And over the years, those all have kind of trickled away to where now JGR is the only one left in ARCA. And really, that ARCA team was set up specifically for Ty Gibbs. That team did not exist until they decided they wanted to bring Ty up through the ranks. So they made that team specifically for Ty. Now, it started a few years before Ty showed up, and that's how Riley Herbst ended up in that car. So Riley kind of kept the seat warm for Ty until Ty was old enough to drive. Ty moves into that car, and then obviously moves up through the ranks after that. And I guess they have decided to keep it around, at least for the time being. I'm surprised they have, because honestly, I thought they were going to get rid of it after Sammy Smith moved up. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, here comes William Sawalich. So I don't know if that team is going to stick around for the long term in ARCA, if ARCA is even around for the long term. I don't know. Because here's the thing. Venturini and JGR don't get along super well, from my understanding. So if you notice, a lot of the Venturini drivers don't necessarily end up in JGR cars. So you'll notice Corey Heim, now that he's up into Xfinity, he's not driving JGR cars. He's in a Sam Hunt car in Xfinity. And even now that Eric Jones is out for a couple weeks in Cup, Corey Heim is going to be in the 43 at Legacy Motor Club. The Venturini drivers don't end up at JGR, even though they are part of the Toyota pipeline. Whereas the drivers that come up through the 18 car in ARCA, they end up in JGR cars. Ty Gibbs obviously ended up in a JGR car. Riley Herbst was in a JGR car for a little bit till they kicked him to the curb. Sammy Smith was in a JGR car and has since gone to Junior Motorsports. So Wallach, I assume, will eventually move up to a JGR Xfinity car. Whereas the Venturini drivers will generally move up to trucks with like Tricon or whoever the Toyota team is at the time in trucks. They won't go to a JGR car. So
I'd argue that has a little bit to do with JGR having so few available spots at upper categories. I mean, they're Cup drivers. They're not going anywhere. They're Xfinity guys. I mean, they've interchanged them out, but it's been the same kind of group of guys. I mean, there's not really anywhere to go with Toyota in JGR once you go up from ARCA.
Well, yes and no. I mean, they can always go to an Xfinity car and then figure it out from there. They go to a JGR Xfinity car. That was an issue before 2311 came along and Legacy switched over to Toyotas, because JGR was the only Toyota team in Cup before that. So the Toyota pipeline was kind of a cone. Like, you had everybody down here at the bottom in like ARCA and trucks, and then it kind of shortened up as you got up to Xfinity, and then it got to the top where there was only the four teams at JGR, and that's all there was. Now there's more options, but it's not a coincidence that none of those Venturini drivers show up in JGR cars, not even Xfinity cars. That's not a coincidence.
I would argue that even like at the Venturini JGR level at ARCA, if Joe Gibbs has a guy that he really, really, really likes, he's just going to stick him in the JGR 18, and he's not even going to give him a chance to go to Venturini.
Yeah. Well, yes, and that is also true, too. But there is the overall Toyota pipeline, which JGR is supposed to be playing nicely with.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't know. It's interesting to see how that funnels, but either way, circling back to competitiveness in ARCA, something has to be done about both of those Toyota teams. And again, I don't know what you do, because you can't just arbitrarily nerf both of them. Like, that's not in the spirit of fairness. Do they have exorbitantly higher budgets than any other team in ARCA? Yes. And I've seen a lot of people saying that that is exactly what ARCA should do, is nerf JGR and Venturini. And you can't do that. Like,
you put like a budget cap on it or something, but
well, you could do that.
I mean, that or like homologate everything like they do in GTE now.
Yeah. Well, everybody, they kind of have done that already, because they're all on the same engines in ARCA now. They're all on Ilmor engines. So essentially at this point, the only real difference in my understanding in ARCA is the chassis. Because the bodies are obviously all the same now. They're all those ugly Gen 6 bodies. And they've all got Ilmor engines. So really the chassis are the biggest thing. And I think that makes the biggest difference, because JGR and Venturini can spend that much more money for newer chassis. Where JGR and Venturini can buy newer chassis, but yet these other teams don't quite have the budget to get newer chassis. I mean, I've seen some of these teams talk about how, I think specifically I saw there was like a Sterling Marlin 2002 chassis that's still kicking around in ARCA. Like, there's some very old chassis still kicking it down in ARCA right now.
We're using Gen 6 bodies and they're not even using Gen 6 chassis.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing.
Like, what, the 4?
Yeah, most of them are still Gen 4 chassis.
Holy crap.
I know a couple years ago, Charlie was talking about they were trying to help the teams get more Gen 5 chassis into the series. Boy. They weren't even trying to get Gen 6 yet. They were trying to get Gen 5 chassis because there were more Gen 5 chassis on the market and they were cheaper.
I mean, I guess what you could do is, like, I mean, this would be a lot more money. You could go design your own chassis that everybody gets the same thing. And everybody gets the same engine, and then you don't have this Venturini Gibbs problem. But I mean, then you're opening up a whole another can of worms.
You are, but I mean, I think that circles back to our conversation last week with Spec Series, that Spec Series generally actually tend to be better. Like, fans don't want it, but I don't know that fans fully understand a lot of times what a Spec Series actually entails. Like, it doesn't kill the racing. In a lot of cases, it makes the racing better.
I would so much rather watch NASCAR, IndyCar, F2 than F1. Like, I understand from a improving technology and like what we can do with race cars point of view, F1's awesome. Like, I'm nothing away from the engineers in F1. That stuff is awesome. It's cool that you can put it on a race car. That doesn't make the racing good. If I really wanted to watch what's interesting about F1, I'd just go to a car show.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's what a lot of fans don't get about when they complain that they don't want a spec series, is they don't realize that if you make it completely non-spec and let the teams do whatever they want, you get F1. Like, that's what NASCAR was like pre-80s or so. Like, there's a reason there was only, like, 3 or 4 cars in the lead lap back in, like, the 70s, the 60s, that era. Like,
and why Richard Petty won, like, every other race.
Well, yes. There was other factors in that, too. Like, there were, like, 80 races a year back in the 50s. And, I mean, he wasn't racing against hardly any competition. Like, Petty Enterprises in the 50s and 60s was basically the Red Bull of that time period.
Yeah, so, but if you give them a car that's like a second lap faster than everybody else, it doesn't matter who else is on the racetrack if the car's that much faster. I mean,
there were some great drivers in that time period, but there is no arguing that the competition right now is much higher than it was back then, because you have more competitive cars, and you have more competitive drivers in the series. That's not to say that there weren't competitive drivers back then, but they didn't always have a car capable of competing with Richard Petty or Junior Johnson or whoever. Because when you put a combination together like Richard Petty and Petty Enterprises in the 60s, or like Max Verstappen and Red Bull right now, that's what you get. You get them winning every single race. Like, if you plopped prime Richard Petty into NASCAR in 2024, he'd win a decent amount of races. He wouldn't win 200 races. He probably wouldn't even win 7 championships. I mean, I would honestly guess that if you, let's say Richard Petty's rookie year was 2004. So he, well, okay, no, let's say his rookie year was 2000. So he gets a few years of the pre-Chase years. So he gets the full season format.
So it's what, like around when Jimmy Johnson started?
Jimmy started in 2002. So yes, basically. Let's do that. Let's say Richard Petty started in 2002. He had the same career length as Jimmy Johnson, ran right alongside Jimmy Johnson his entire career. I'm going to say Richard Petty probably wins 60 races and wins 3 championships.
It's probably fair.
I think that's fair. And there's going to be a lot of people going, oh, no, Richard Petty, he'd have won at least 100 races and 5 championships at least in that time period. And maybe he would have, but, I mean, I don't know. That seems really high for me because...
Well, you got to figure Jeff Gordon was like... revolutionary driver that blew everybody's doors off in the late 90s and very early 2000s. Then Jimmy Johnson comes along and wins 7 championships in the time that Jeff won, like, what, 1?
Yeah.
No, what?
Well, no.
No.
Jeff's last championship was the year before Jimmy's rookie season.
Yeah. So, I mean, Jeff is this guy that blew everybody's doors off, and then Jimmy comes in and blows his doors off in the same car, same team. Like, it's pretty tight in Cup now, and I mean, everybody's getting kicked out of seats if they're not doing well enough. You've seen that with SHR and Gibbs guys from past 10 years or so. Like, if you're not winning races, you're not in the Cup series.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I think Petty would be winning races, but he wouldn't have anywhere close to the numbers that he does have if you plopped him in right now.
Oh, there's no one car that's definitely faster than anybody else any given week.
Yeah.
And with all like the stage breaks and stage cautions and all that, it brings everybody closer together. So you're not like you're never getting that lap advantage over everybody else. Even if you are that much faster, there's still everybody's catching up to you every 60 laps.
So here's the thing I've noticed when watching back through NASCAR Classics. The Gen 3 car showed up in 1983, somewhere in the early 80s. With the advent of the Gen 3 car, NASCAR became a lot more competitive than it was prior to that. You had a lot more drivers up front that were capable of winning races. You had a lot more teams showing up that were much more capable of winning races. What happened when the Gen 3 car showed up? Richard Petty all of a sudden stopped winning as many races. He won a couple after the Gen 3 was introduced. Now, again, this is on the backside of his career. I mean, he was right at 40, I think, when the Gen 3 showed up. But again, we've seen drivers this day and age long past 40 still being extremely competitive. Kevin Harvick was arguably at his best after 40. So, hypothetically, Richard Petty should have been as well. But yet, the Gen 3 comes along, and I feel like he won maybe 3 races after the Gen 3 showed up. And he was still competitive there for a few years afterward. Like, he won his 200th in the 1984 Pepsi 400. That was his final win, and he ran the next 8 seasons after that winless before retiring in 92. But for 3, 4, 5 seasons following that final win in 84, he was still competitive some of the time. Like, he could still run top five, top 10 a lot of the time. He just wasn't winning because the cars became more competitive and the field became more competitive. So all of a sudden, he's not got this dominating Red Bull-like car that he can just go out there and kick everybody's ass with now.
I would argue that with more spec series, it gives each driver a better chance to win. So then the difference between, like, the driver being worth a tenth of a second a lap is greatly, like, kind of blown up, I guess, mm-hmm. where, like, say you and me are driving on a track and you're a little bit better at that track than I am, but I got a better car than you, I'm going to win. It doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah. But
whereas if we have the same car and you're a little bit better at the track than I am, I'm probably not going to win unless something happens to you.
Now, obviously, that's within reason. Now, because in your example of if I'm better at the track, but you've got a better car, you're going to win. Now, there's obvious exceptions to that. Like,
right.
You put Cody Ware in a Red Bull car, he's probably still not winning. Or Lance Stroll. Like, look at Lance Stroll. Fernando Alonso is up running top five and almost in the podium, and Lance Stroll can't even get points.
Right. There's obvious disparities between different drivers, but mm-hmm. you can't convince me that, like, just look at Hendrick Motorsports. You cannot convince me that Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman, and William Byron are that much different in race pace. Mm-hmm. You put them on a simulator in the same car at the same settings, they're probably going to do about the same lap time. And it kind of shows in their results. They're usually pretty close together. Larson and Byron have been doing better lately. But, I mean, if the whole field is like that, where drivers are very close together, and then you give them a car that's the same, everybody's right there all the time.
Well, and I think we saw that during COVID when they did the iRacing Pro Invitational Series. Now, granted, some of these drivers had never touched iRacing before this, and some of them had a lot of experience with iRacing. And iRacing is not one-to-one exact simulation of the real thing, but it's very close. So hypothetically, you get a little practice on there. If you're good in real life, it should translate over to iRacing very well. But, I mean, as you can see behind my head here, Timmy Hill won one of those races. So, now granted, Timmy Hill has a lot of iRacing experience, but I don't think that should have made that much of a difference. I think that really showed that Timmy Hill might be better than what we've seen. He's just never been in a good car in real life.
Yeah, I thought that while watching it. I mean, mm-hmm. I've thought Timmy Hill was a pretty fast driver, but in the Gen 6 days when that was going on, and he was racing, what, like the 66 for God mm-hmm. knows who? Like
MBM?
Exactly. Like,
yeah.
That's not a competitive car in the slightest, but I mean, you throw them in something midfield now with the new car that everybody's pretty much got the same car. Who knows? Maybe you can run top 10 sometimes. Like,
and that's the thing. And I don't think it was until after 2020 that he started his truck team. Cause he's got a truck team now that he and his brother Tyler Hill drive. They kind of just trade off and, from the get-go with that truck team, he was running top 10, top 15 from the very beginning. Now, granted, that's the truck series and not the cup series, but still, that's a startup team with no alliances, and he's going out there and running top 10, top 15 with it. So, yeah. Like, that should say something.
Yeah, I've always thought Timmy Hill was better than people gave him credit for. And it was funny watching the iRacing stuff. And they're like, wow, Timmy Hill. Like, whoa.
Yeah. I agree. I'm the same way. And that's why as soon as he won that and as soon as Lionel announced they were doing it, I had to get that car. Like, that is a centerpiece of my collection. I say a centerpiece and it's at the bottom of the case. But still, the fact that it's in the case. I mean, if you knew how many diecasts I have, the that's made it into that case. Those are the what I consider the premier pieces in my collection.
Basically, you don't want to know how many diecast Garth has.
No, and that number has been thinned down a lot recently, although I bought a few more yesterday at the antique store. But still, that's neither here nor there. No, I bought some cool ones yesterday. For a long time, I've been trying to get the... you remember... Well, you'd probably been too young, but have you seen, like, I think it was the race at Dover, the first race after 9/11, when everybody ran all the patriotic schemes.
Mm-hmm.
Dale Jarrett had, it was basically his normal UPS scheme, except they had just put a giant American flag on the hood. I have wanted that diecast for a long time as part of my Dale Jarrett collection, and I've never been able to really find one, and finally found one yesterday and scooped it up.
Man, that would have been such a cool paint scheme if they just taken the UPS design and made it red, white, and blue.
Yeah, right? There was a couple of them that they made the entire car a flag.
I remember like watching part of that race at one point and being like, there's so many freaking flag cars. Holy crap. <yeah. laughs> Just looks like a bunch of America flags going around a track.
Yeah. I think Sterling Marlin had one that was just all like a giant American flag.
Yeah, I believe it.
And then the other one I got yesterday was in 2004. I think it was at the Pepsi 400. There was a bunch of cars that ran a special scheme for like Coke C2, some weird Coke that they were trying to introduce at that time. It obviously didn't last.
Is that the one that Jeff Gordon won in the Pepsi scheme and then everybody's throwing beer bottles and stuff?
No, that was a Talladega race.
Oh, that's right.
I don't remember what year that was. It was 01 or 02, something like that, but or it might have been 03. But no, there was four or five cars in this race with Coke C2 schemes, and I picked up Bill Elliott's 98, like number 98 Coke C2 car from that race. I think I'd have to go back and look. I think that's the only race he ran the number 98.
Yeah, it doesn't sound familiar at all.
Yeah. I believe that was an extra Evernham car, but I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at that. It's not got the Evernham font, because you know how like the nines in Evernham numbers, they had that like little E that came off the back of
them. Yeah, yeah.
It didn't have that. It wasn't that font. So it may not have been an Evernham car. I'm not 100% sure what it was.
Those Evernham Dodges were so freaking cool looking. Especially like the Elliott Sadler one that they had. It was a red car with the green numbers.
Yeah.
I love that car. I want to get a diecast of that now.
Let me see if I can go back here. Oh, Jeff Gordon did win that race, but I don't think it was the race you're talking about.
No, it wasn't. That was a
it wasn't a race. Pepsi scheme, though.
Jeff Gordon had a habit of winning Coke-sponsored races and Pepsi-sponsored cars.
Yeah, right? Wait. Okay. Bill Elliott finished 18th in that race. Oh, it was a cell phone car. It was a Elliott Racing car. Okay, that makes sense. How many Coke C2 cars were in this race? Kurt Busch, Tony Stewart, Kevin Harvick, Ricky Rudd, Bill Elliott, Jeff Burton, Greg Biffle, John Andretti. 8 cars with a Coke C2 scheme in that race. And not a single one won the race. In fact, the Pepsi car wins the race. We should do that like once a week. You know how on Speed Street, Connor Daly's his podcast, how they do their like once a week, they'll go back and look at a random Indy 500 driver. We should go back and look at like one random race in history every week.
The 1934 Indy 500.
Yeah. I'll have to think about that. Think about how we can do that in the future. That might be a cool segment. Either way, though, I don't even remember what we've talked about at this point. We got through ARCA, or I guess we've gotten through ARCA. We were bitching about no competitiveness,
complaining about ARCA for half an hour.
Yeah. Xfinity, I didn't think was a bad race. It was at least a step up from ARCA. It got a little boring in the middle, but then everybody started wrecking each other at the end. And it turned into a fuel mileage race, especially after we continued to get further and further into overtime. Jesse Love somehow went like 55 laps on a tank of fuel, which nobody thought was possible. I think mid-40s was where they were thinking the fuel mileage should be. And he was leading a lot at the end of the race, so it's not like he was saving fuel. But somehow comes home with the win in, like, was it three overtimes?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so a lot of overtimes, a lot of extra laps on the fuel, and somehow comes home with the victory. I'm a little intrigued by that. Like, I'm happy for Jesse. Jesse's a good dude.
Where'd they put the extra fuel tank?
Right. Like, I'm really curious if NASCAR's looking into that, because there's no way he should have made it that far, given where they thought the fuel run was going to be lap-wise. Like,
and you can't convince me Larry Mack is wrong.
Yeah, right? So, I don't know. It almost feels like there was something shady going on with that fuel tank. Now, again, I'm happy for Jesse. I'm glad he finally got himself a win. It's redemption for Atlanta, the race that he should have won before NASCAR screwed him over when he didn't have enough fuel because of NASCAR's stupidly long caution that shouldn't have been that long. But I don't know. Something felt off about that. I don't know.
They just had enough overtime so we'd crash enough cars for NASCAR and Tony Stewart to both be happy.
Yeah, right? Doc sees him some birds. He's in attack mode.
Oh, boy. Get the window, Doc.
Yeah, right? On to the Cup race. Tyler and I disagree on this race. Tyler says this race was incredibly boring. I agree there were boring parts of it, but overall, I didn't think this race was bad, especially in the beginning when it was literally 3x3x3 all the way through the field and BJ McLeod is leading. Like, that was awesome. You disagree, though.
The BJ McLeod part's definitely cool. It bugs me how, with how the Super Speedway package has been recently and how these drivers have adapted to it, like, the first 80% of the race, it doesn't feel like it matters at all. Like, unless you wreck in the first three quarters of the race, as long as you're in the vicinity of the lead pack towards the end of the race, it doesn't really matter what you did for the first 150 laps. So you got these guys, like, even NASCAR's complained about this, where the guys are running around at 50-60% throttle and just trying to save fuel and make it to the end of the race. Like, I understand from a strategy point, like, that totally makes sense. You want to get to the end of the race and have as few pit stops as possible. Sure, whatever. But I would rather, I like the end of the race where everybody's going as hard as they can to get to the right spot and make the right move and win the race. But the first 150 something laps where everybody's just trying not to screw up. And the racing shows that, because sure, they're 3x3 through the field. That looks cool, but they're just doing this 3x3 for like 100 something laps. And it's just, other than when they make a green flag pit stop sequence, which doesn't happen anymore because we've got the stage breaks. Like,
it did in this race.
They do get a couple if nobody wrecks sometimes. But
I mean, they got one in that first stage. But, well, they were going to get one regardless, but it got a little hastened when BJ runs out in front of the field and almost gets himself turned.
But then you have, like, the Daytona 500 this year where somebody spins in the middle of the stage and then everybody pits and can make it to the end of the stage and they just pit at the stage. And it's just, yeah. I understand from a strategy point of view why all of it makes sense. It's just, I don't care to watch these super speedway races until the last 40 or so laps, because you can just look at the timing and scoring and see everybody's still in the race except for these guys. That's all I need to know.
I mean, it was better than the IndyCar race. I didn't watch the IndyCar race live, but I watched it after because I was watching the Cup race and it was happening at the same time. So I went back later and watched it, and admittedly wasn't paying super close attention because I was watching it at work, but I didn't see hardly anything happening. Like, it was single file most of the race. There wasn't a lot of passing. It looked a lot like an F1 race. Now, it was kind of interesting at the end with Newgarden and then Herta trying to get around Scott Dixon, but, and then the whole little thing where Herta runs into the back of New Garden and screws him up. But I mean, other than that, I didn't really see a lot of interesting or exciting things in the IndyCar race, whereas at least they were jockeying for position and doing halfway exciting things in the Cup race.
See, I disagree, because about 10-15 laps into the IndyCar race, they had a yellow flag, and everybody split pit sequences. Half field pit, half the field stayed out, which then for the rest of the race meant that the guys at pit were in the back trying to race their way back through everybody, whereas the guys in the front were just trying to save fuel and do what they could to keep a gap to them. And then they'd pit, and the guys going hard would have to race back through the tail end of the guys saving fuel to get back up closer to the guys at the top. And then they both strategies came together at the very end of the race, and Scott Dixon was able to pull it out. But it was one of those strategy races where literally half the field's doing the opposite thing of the other half and trying to race through each other the entire time. I thought it was a really interesting strategy race, and probably one of my favorite open wheel races that I've watched in a year or so.
I mean, I agree, but interesting doesn't always correlate to exciting, though. And in this case, I didn't think it correlated to exciting. Like, it wasn't holding my attention.
No, the last 20, 30 laps of the IndyCar race was pretty cool, I thought. Is Dixon going to be able to save enough fuel to win the race? Or are the other guys going to be able to catch up to him?
Okay, so if the last 20, 30 laps were the only interesting ones, then by your argument with Talladega, why is Long Beach 85 laps? Why isn't it just 30 laps?
Because I'm watching it develop the entire race instead of just hoping and praying that my favorite driver makes it to the end of the race.
Okay, I guess, but okay. I don't really have a counter argument for that, but I don't fully agree with it either.
Well, in the IndyCar race, I'm sitting there watching it. I'm seeing who's pitting, where the gap is. There's stuff to pay attention to the whole time. The Cup race, the whole 80% of it, is watching cars go in circles waiting for somebody to wreck. There's nothing to pay attention to other than guys going in circles.
Again, I don't really have a counter argument, but I don't really fully agree either. Like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time articulating my argument to this, because on one hand, I do agree with you, but on the other hand, like, there's got to be an element of, like, less F1 and more NASCAR, and I feel like the IndyCar race leaned more on the F1 side of things.
In what way? That they weren't, like, wrecking the field every other turn?
No, in that there wasn't much on-track passing. Like, yes, there was strategy, but that's the thing. You're not going to draw a new fan in with strategy. And I think that's IndyCar's biggest problem right now, is there's got to be an exciting on-track product, and that wasn't what we got at Long Beach. We got an interesting strategy to watch, sure, but the on-track product itself wasn't, like, from the outside looking in, if you don't understand the strategy and you're just looking at it saying, I want to be an IndyCar fan, this looks interesting, and you start watching and all you're seeing is it basically an F1 style parade with not a lot of passing, and you don't fully understand the strategy and you don't realize that there's strategy going on,
it's gonna be a turn off. I saw Newgarden and Herta go through the field from 15th to 5th twice during that race. That seems like a lot of passing to me.
I mean, two cars passing through the field, sure, but
with a couple others that they were dragging along that moved up towards the end of the race.
I guess. I don't know.
I saw a fair amount of passing in that race.
I didn't. But again, I wasn't paying extremely close attention, and I don't think a new fan would be either. Like, that's the thing. I feel like the way I was watching it was the way a typical new fan, just kind of flipping through the channels and finds this race. I feel like they're not going to be paying super close attention to everything, and they're probably going to miss some of the more finer details like that.
Probably. So, but I think that's exactly how we got to the situation we're at in NASCAR right now with the playoffs and the stage cautions and everything, because they're playing to new fans that just want to tune in and see something happen.
Yes and no. I mean, did NASCAR go too far with it? Yes. But to some extent, you do have to cater to those people. Otherwise, you get 300,000 people watching.
Yeah, but 600,000 people watched an F1 race at 3 a.m. So,
right. So, well, and you were talking before this that more people watched the ARCA race than watched the IndyCar race this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest issue with that is the way that race played out. Now, obviously, you don't know how that race is going to play out beforehand, but I think that's a common problem right now with IndyCar. Is if I'm a new fan tuning into any IndyCar street race or any similar race like this, this is more or less what I'm going to see, and I'm not going to get excited about it if I'm a new fan. This is not something that, if I've never watched IndyCar before or I've only watched it extremely casually, if I tune into this, that race is not going to get me excited.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that.
And I think that's IndyCar's biggest problem right now. Like, you don't have to make every race, like, NASCAR style. You don't have to make every race basically Texas of last year. But there needs to be more races like that. That way you can draw in those people and keep them. Because if they watch the Texas type of races, then they'll start to understand more of the strategy and they will be more interested in the Long Beach type of races. But as it stands now, when I don't think we've had a single race yet this year that would even be close to what Texas was last year, what does a new fan have to look at? Like, and obviously they need the new fans if only 300,000 people are watching.
Yeah. I mean, being the same time as Cup and on a lower broadcast network doesn't help either, but
yeah,
I don't know. I hate it because I would prefer to watch a Long Beach style race where I can sit on the couch, put the phone away, and be interested in the racing product and keep up with the race and what's happening versus the Cup race. Like, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did watch like the last 50 or 60 laps. For 40 something of those laps, I'm sitting there playing on my phone because nothing's happening on track. Like, there's people going like this through the field, but like, there's nothing keeping me invested in the whole race, which I guess is my biggest problem. Because sure, I can sit there and sit on the couch and do some stuff while the race is on, and that's what NASCAR at Super Speedways is perfect for, because you do nothing for 45 minutes playing your phone, look up, and we're getting close to the end of the stage, we'll watch this, and back to the phone, and getting close to the end of the second stage, and do something else, do the laundry, whatever, get towards the end of the race, I'm going to watch this for about 20-30 minutes, and I'm really interested. Race is over, time to go do something else. Versus other forms of racing, you actually have to pay attention to the whole race, and I think that's why we're losing a whole lot of people, because as we've seen, not even just in motorsports, in the broader American sports picture, seeing this as baseball, football, everything, people want to have moments to be excited about. And if there's nothing happening right now, nobody cares. Like, baseball even had to put in a pitch clock to make it go faster so that way people would actually watch the games again.
Yes, and that's the thing. Like, do I necessarily agree with that mindset that there's got to be a moment in every race to get excited about? No, but that is the landscape that we're in right now, not just with sports, but with everything. You've got to evolve with the times, and you've got to do what draws in the people. Otherwise, you don't survive. I mean, yeah. It's the same way with practically anything. It's the same way with YouTube. YouTube is not the same as it was 10 years ago. You can't be doing the same things on YouTube today as you were 10 years ago. It's right. Not popular. You won't grow your channel. And it's the same thing in sports. Like, yes, is it a better quote unquote racing product? What we saw in Long Beach? Yes, arguably yes. But that's not what the majority of people want to see these days. So no. you've got to do something to make it palatable to the broader audience. Otherwise, your sport doesn't survive.
Yeah, it just kills me because, I mean, I would rather watch that any day of the week than pretty much any other form of motorsport right now. But, I mean, so many people want those Game 7, like, interesting moments that the series agreeably is run by a bunch of friggin' dinosaurs right now. There's no promotion happening at all whatsoever. Yeah. And that, plus it not catering towards the casual fan anymore, is it. I love it. A lot of other people do, but clearly not enough to promote the series. It sucks. I wish we'd bring some ovals back, because IndyCar and ovals is freaking awesome. I don't know how you could ever watch IndyCars on an oval and be disappointed. But,
and I think that's the biggest thing. Like I mentioned Texas last year. I think that would be one of the easiest things for them to do to make it a little more palatable to the broader audience. Put it on more ovals, because that tends to be where IndyCar has more of their exciting moments.
Oh, dude, if we can bring back like Kansas, Chicagoland, all that kind of stuff, like, that'd be awesome. And yeah. I've probably complained about this for probably 4 hours now combined on this podcast. Why did we have a month and a half gap between the first two races? That killed everything. Mm-hmm. You can start the season and be like, hey, look, we got this really cool thing going on. St. Pete was pretty cool. It was a good race. Radio silence for a month and a half. You're going to lose everybody there. And I don't know how you could be the owner of a series, look at that schedule and say, yep, that's what we're going with.
I mean, they have less races. They have less races than ARCA.
Do literally something. Like, I don't even care if it's we're gonna race on the Indy road course again. Like, do something. Go somewhere. There's got to be some track somewhere somehow that you can put a race or two on in that time period that isn't Rich Boys Club thermal and like actually have it matter for something. Like, I don't know. It's my favorite racing series in the world, and they suck at promoting it.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about ARCA.
And after you said for like half an hour how much the ARCA race sucked.
It did. It absolutely did. But I also think the IndyCar race sucked. So there is that.
All right.
Whatever. ARCA hasn't been consistently good since 2018. That doesn't mean I don't still love the series and want it to be good, but that series has been downhill since 2018. So we need to start heading toward wrapping up here, because I know Tyler's got things to do. Very quickly, Michael McDowell turned into Joey Logano at the end of the Cup race and got himself turned, almost won the race. Brad did nothing wrong there. If you think that was Brad's fault, you're wrong. Reddick wins. Very cool moment in victory lane with Jordan holding Reddick's son and taking him up into victory lane. Honestly, sidebar on that. How cool would that be to be Tyler Reddick's son and just have like, just be that close with Michael Jordan and just like have that much access to him? And it's like, it's normal. It's like he's your uncle.
Yeah, right. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, if you know who imagine. He is, that'd be great.
Yeah.
He's going to look back on this in like 20 years and be like, holy shit, that was so cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's not old enough yet to really understand who Michael Jordan is just yet.
No.
He's just cool Uncle Mike right now.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, not even 20 years. I'll bet you how old is he? What, 3 or 4? He's got to be like 3 or 4.
Like 10 years or so.
Yeah, 10 years. He'll look back on this and go, holy shit. he'll be rewatching the 2024 Talladega race and be like, Wow.
That's me.
And it may not even be, because at that point, it still may be normal for him, because maybe Reddick's still driving for 2311 at that point. Maybe he's still close with Jordan at that point.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Either way, though, Talladega was cool, no matter what Tyler says. IndyCar was boring. Max wins again at China. Not a huge win, not as far ahead as he has been in a lot of races, but still.
It's only 20 seconds this time.
Yeah, right? I think it was less than 10, actually.
No, it wasn't.
Was it? Okay. I know near the end he wasn't very far ahead. He must have really stretched it.
That's usually how that goes.
Yeah.
Dixon, when you make the tires like bricks and they can last for a billion thousand years, and you get to the end of the race and he's like, oh, I want to go fast again.
Yeah, right? Dixon wins Long Beach. Tyler, what happened with the St. Pete stuff?
So, they disqualified Newgarden and McLaughlin and gave Power a 10-point penalty after St. Pete, because when they were in the middle of Long Beach warm-up, they were using the push-to-pass a little bit to make sure it worked. And IndyCar saw something on the data that didn't look right. So they went back to the St. Pete data and found out that the Penske cars had illegally modified their push-to-pass to be able to work on restarts before the start-finish line. And the reason Power has a smaller penalty is because he didn't use it. The other two cars used it before they were supposed to. Powers is just that the car was modified, so they had to do something. But the other two, they found, gained a competitive advantage by using push to pass before the restart, hence why Newgarden won. And they disqualified them both. So that takes Newgarden from leading the championship down to like 10th or something, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, not a good week. But, I mean, for all the people that are all, Penske's running the series and he's just making it cheat so his cars can win, they did the right thing here.
You know, I was about to say, funny that the series owner, it's his cars. I mean, you could make the argument, playing devil's advocate here, you could make the argument that it was just a scapegoat and they've got even more illegal stuff than this, and they just wanted to be like, oh, look, we're actually penalizing Penske cars. We're being fair. And there's actually way more than that.
No, if they were going to do that, Pelot wouldn't have won the past two championships.
Yeah, fair. I think that's all we got for open wheel stuff, though, unless you've got more than that.
Not really. I mean, we kind of talked about Long Beach. I liked it. You didn't. It was pretty cool. You would disagree. Yeah.
Points after this week before we head into picks. Tyler extends his IndyCar lead by a lot, because Rossi did not do me any favors. 81-55 is Tyler's lead now in IndyCar.
You need to adjust, because didn't you pick McLaughlin's for St. Pete?
Oh, I did.
Ooh, you're going to have to put a big fat goose egg next to that one.
Is it zero?
It's disqualified.
Wouldn't that just mean he gets points for, like, last or second to last?
No, it's 0 points.
Is it? Are you sure?
Let me...
They haven't updated the racing reference page yet, so I don't know.
Finish third. Well, if you look at standings right now, Scott McLaughlin is in 29th in the championship with 5 points, which I'm pretty sure those 5 points would have been what he got at Long Beach for his really not awesome race.
Yes, it is. Okay, so you are correct. He got 0 for...
Oof, I win the IndyCar championship this year.
Yeah, I was about to say, congratulations, Tyler, for winning our IndyCar championship this year. We'll see you next year. Okay,
I win one I care about. Yay.
Yeah, Tyler now leads 81-20. good start to the season for me. ARCA, though, I lead 130-100 now after Jake Finch's domination in Talladega and Andres Perez de Lara not having such a great day. Xfinity, I extend my lead there as well. 309-257 after Jesse Loves went. I went 2 for 2 to start the weekend and almost went 3 for 3 until Cole Raz went full Sean Hingarani in Kern. So I was looking good on Saturday.
Yeah.
Sunday, not so much. Although I did get P2 for the cup race also. So, cut into Tyler's lead in that one. Tyler still leads now, but only by 8 points, 233 to 225 after Talladega. How's your picks looking? Did you beat us this week? Let us know what your picks are for this upcoming week as we head to Dover and Barber. All right, so three races from Dover this weekend. We've got ARCA, Xfinity, and Cup. The ARCA race will be Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern on FS1, the General Tire 150. Tyler, who wins ARCA at Dover?
Well, it's always a race to see who's going to be able to pick William Sawalich, and I lost that this week. So we're going to go with Gio Ruggiero because...
You gave me Sawalich. Don't even.
Yeah, because I had it last week. We're just trading Sawalich at this point. But okay. I'm going to go with Gio Ruggiero. I think he's probably the fastest of the Venturini cars, and to put that in the field, that's probably the second fastest car in the field right now, so we'll see.
Fair enough. As we already figured out, I'm going with William Sawalich. It's the Gibbs car. It's Dover. It's a combo East race. I think William Sawalich wins. I think that's a pretty easy one. Although, that being said, Gio Ruggiero did beat him at Five Flags, so... We'll see. I hadn't seen this. NASCAR announces nominees for NASCAR Hall of Fame class for 2020. Modern era ballot will be Greg Biffle, Neil Bonnett, Tim Brewer, Jeff Burton, Randy Dorton, Carl Edwards, Harry Gant, Harry Hyde, Ricky Rudd, Jack Sprague. Pioneer ballot is
Carl Edwards is the only one in there that sounds anywhere remotely close to worth Hall of Fame status.
He only won 5 more races than Ricky Rudd.
Trying to convince me that Greg Biffle and Jeff Burton deserve to be in Hall of Fame.
Greg Biffle is a truck and Xfinity champion. Jeff Burton won 21 Cup races, including the Southern 500 and 2 Coke 600s.
Okay. So anyway, William Byron's a lock for the Hall of Fame.
I mean, at this point, I think he's on track to be. We'll see what he does for the rest of his career, but yeah, especially if he wins a championship, yeah, I think he's absolutely a lock.
Yeah.
I don't know. Pioneer ballot is Ray Hendrick, Banjo Matthews, Ralph Moody, Larry Phillips, and Bob Welburn. And the landmark award nominees are Alvin Hawkins, NASCAR's first flagman. Lisa France Kennedy, the executive vice chair and one of the most influential women in sports. Yeah. Dr. Joseph Mattioli, founder of Pocono. Dr. Dean Sicking, inventor of the safer barrier. And Les Richter, longtime NASCAR executive, there should be a comma there, helped grow the sport on the West Coast.
Where's Larry Mack?
For the Landmark Award? I think he's already in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
Oh, he is? That's great.
Hang on. I'm going to check on that. I think he might be.
Mike Joy.
No, he's not in there.
Cringe.
I'm surprised by that. I thought he was in.
You lied to me.
I did. I'm good at that.
Yeah.
That kind of surprises me that he's not even been nominated yet. I don't know. Either way, back to picks. What was the last pick? Oh, we did ARCA. So, Xfinity. I gotta get back to the page here. Xfinity will be Saturday, if the page ever loads. Maybe. NASCARmedia.com sucks. To the NASCAR app we go. Xfinity, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. on FS1 for the Bet Rivers 200. Tyler, who bets their way into the rivers and wins this one? That one sucked. Either way, go ahead.
I'm going to go with Justin Allgaier. I was looking at Racing Reference earlier. I don't have this thing up anymore. But I believe Justin Allgaier has a top five in the last 3 or 4 times we've been to Dover in the Xfinity Series. So even if he doesn't win, which he hasn't won any of those, he's still a lock for a good points day, and I'm going to Scott Dixon my way into the championship here.
Nice. Solid pick. I mean, yes, I think this probably is Allgaier's best track, this or Phoenix. So, solid pick. I'm going to go with last year's winner of this race, though, Ryan Truex. I think he goes back-to-back. He's still in a JGR car. I think he wins again. I think Ryan Truex wins the Bet Rivers 200. On to Cup Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern on FS1, the Worth 400. Who is worth it on Sunday, Tyler?
Going to go with Ross Chastain for the same reason I went with Justin Allgaier last time. He's got a top five in the last three times we've been there, and one of those was a win.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with Martin Truex. It's going to be an all Truex weekend. This is one of Martin's best tracks as well, so I think Martin takes home the victory on Sunday at Dover. All right, and then finally, IndyCar this weekend for the Children's of Alabama Indy Grand Prix, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern on NBC. Tyler, who wins at Barber? Who needs a good barber to win at Barber?
No, boy. I'm going to go with the same exact reasoning I've used on the last two of them. I'm going to go with Pato O'Ward. He's raced here three times. He's got three top fives and one win. Can't go wrong.
Pato O'Ward, who's now already winner on the season, now that he's now a winner at St. Pete.
He is, and if he hadn't had such a freaking miserable weekend at Long Beach, he'd probably be a little better.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Scott Dixon. He's won four of the last six races. And I think he makes it 5 of 7 this week at Barber.
You only know that because I told you that.
Huh?
You only know that because I told you that.
Oh, I saw that on social media. No, I think I saw it on the broadcast.
Really?
I'm pretty sure they talked about it post-race.
Yeah, they did. You only watched the post-race.
I didn't just watch the post-race, but I did watch the post-race. I'm a nerd like that. I like to watch pre-race and post-race.
Me too. Dude, I'll watch like the whole five-hour Indy 500 broadcast. I don't care.
Yeah. Doc, do you want to make picks too?
Doc picks William Swalage and Max Verstappen.
That's right. That's right. They're in Miami this weekend, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. The Ferrari's going to be blue this weekend.
Why?
They're announcing a new partnership with HP.
Hmm. Okay. So, Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern for the Crypto.com Miami Grand Prix.
Wow, that screams Miami.
It does, doesn't it?
Crypto.com.
I pick Max Verstappen.
Science.
Okay, fair enough. His future teammate?
This will be the first time that a Ferrari F1 car has been blue.
First time ever?
Ever.
Hmm.
Ferrari as a company entered a couple blue cars in the NART series back in like the 80s or 90s, I think. NART
series?
NART.
Nerd!
It's like a GT like sports car thing. But okay. There was something like F1 pissed off Enzo Ferrari or some stupid thing like that. And he was like, fine, I'll make my car blue. I don't really get it. But, yeah, so it'd be the first time Scuderia Ferrari's had a blue car ever.
Nice. That's your fun fact of the day. So hopefully the driver intros aren't as cringe as they were last year for Miami. I don't remember who that was they had doing it, but they were pretty cringe.
you should get, like, the WWE, let's get ready to rumble, dude, do it again.
Right.
Max Verstappen!
I think that's basically what they did.
He did do that at Texas one year.
Yeah, nice.
Because that's American culture, is a WWE dude.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's not like walkout songs like they do at Bristol.
It's not Dwayne Johnson or Keanu Reeves or a country singer. It's the guy that does the WWE intros.
They should take F1 to Bristol. That would be hilarious.
Oh, my God. Dude, those cars couldn't even make the turn because they're so big.
Yeah, I know.
F1 cars are bigger than my truck.
Can you imagine a parade single file around Bristol?
If I want to do that, I just watched the Spring Cup races from a couple years ago.
Fair enough. But are you talking before the dirt?
Yeah.
Okay. Either way, I think that's all we got for today. Tyler says he has things to do, so he's got to go do his things.
I wanted to be done an hour ago, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Too bad for you. I think that'll do it for today, though. Enjoy the races this weekend from Dover, Miami, and Barber. And we'll see you again next week, same time, same place. At that, I'm Garth. That's Tyler. This is the Rookie Stripes podcast on Racing News Now.
Yeah.